weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Back to Roz and Emma on Drive. I'm Dave Kelly and you're listening to Game On. Coming up, Wembley awaits on Sunday with Alan Colley, and Fergal Brennan will be reflecting on the Republic of Ireland's win last night over Finland. We're at the Aviva Stadium ahead of Ireland's Autumn Nations Series game against Argentina. Paul O'Flynn is in Arlington, Texas for Katie Taylor, Amanda Serrano too, and Jane Mangan will be previewing the weekend racing action. For your say, text 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200. On X, it's at Game On 2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
You're very welcome along. Let's just take a look, first of all, at some of the headlines today. Derry City and Rory Higgins have parted company by mutual agreement. The club today confirmed his departure. During his time in charge, Higgins led Derry to the FAI Cup in 2022 and they finished as league runners-up twice. His final game in charge was, of course, Sunday's FAI Cup final defeat to Drogheda United. The club's title challenge fell away in recent weeks. Kilkenny's Walter Walsh has announced his inter-county hurling retirement. He won 3 All-Ireland medals and 7 Leinster titles. Manager Derek Ling described the 2016 All-Star as a towering presence for the county. To golf, Rory McIlroy remains very much on course for a 6th race to Dubai title. At the halfway point of the DP World Tour Championship, McIlroy is tied for 2nd place on 8 under par. He carded a 3 under par round of 69 today and is tied for 2nd place with Tyrrell Hatton. And after today's round, he gave his verdict on his day's work.
Probably not quite as good as how I felt coming off the course yesterday. I got off to a great start, 4 under through 7. Feeling like I was in total control of what I was doing, and then I just started to miss a few fairways around the turn. And you know, when you start missing fairways the way the course is set up this week, you're going to struggle. So you know, I made 2 bogeys in the next 3 holes, steadied the ship a little bit, but felt like I let a couple of chances slip by on 14 and 15, but played the last 3 holes well. It was nice to finish with a birdie and you know, at least shoot something in the 60s after the start that I had.
Antoine Rosner leads the tournament on 9 under par by 1 shot. Shane Lowry still very much in contention. He's in a share of 5th place on 6 under. Tom McKibben on 3 under par is tied for 16th. Mark King has been banned from snooker for 5 years after being found guilty of 1 count of match fixing and 1 count of providing inside information on a match. King, who denies the charges, was also ordered to pay more than €80,000 in costs. He was suspended last year by the sport's governing body after suspicious betting was reported on a Welsh Open match against Joe Perry. So there are your Friday evening headlines. Alan Colley joins me in the studio. Alan, I suppose obviously we'll get on to the game last night shortly and the big game at Wembley on Sunday as well. But just one of the stories we mentioned there, I suppose no real surprise, the announcement coming from Derry City today.
Yeah, evening Dave. It's no real surprise, to be honest, which probably the only surprise is that it's taken them 5 days. But the general consensus around the Aviva Stadium after the game on Sunday was that Rory would probably lose his job off the back of the disappointing end. When you think they were in a 2-horse title race with probably 2 weeks to go and they end up finishing 4th, so that was obviously a major disappointment. And then when they go into the cup final against Drogheda, trying to salvage the season and get themselves into Europe, and of course to lose out to a team who finished 9th in the league as well, so it was going to be very difficult for Rory to stay on. Now I like Rory, I think he did a decent job, but this year, and when you think back at the last 2 years when we were, I suppose, predicting that he was building something to challenge Shamrock Rovers, that's never quite materialised, Dave. Even if you look at the 2 years that they finished runners up, they never really laid a glove on Shamrock Rovers. It wasn't like it was as close as what we've seen this year. It was almost as if, as I've predicted, it was like when you see Rory McIlroy finish 2nd in a major, but he shot 10 under or 10 over on Thursday and Friday, yet he comes through the field with an unbelievable charge on the Saturday and finishes 2nd, but he was never really in with a challenge. I felt Derry was a little bit like that the last couple of seasons, and everybody was predicting this was going to be the year that they would mount a serious challenge. Then of course Shamrock Rovers have had their trials and tribulations this year, and everybody thought definitely this is going to be Derry's year. Of course Shelburne come out of nowhere and they just never got the job done, Derry. And then, as I said, the cup final was the major disappointment, really. And when you think back at a game in Europe in the middle of the summer as well, the loss to a team to Gibraltar, so it was going to be very, very difficult for Rory to stay on, I think, off the back of all that.
Of course, it was a season that promised so much for Derry, didn't it? But ultimately fell short. And you could see with Rory's interviews over the last couple of weeks, you know, that growing frustration and just not being able to turn things around.
Yeah, of course. And to be fair to him, it was a tough watch, his interview after the game on Sunday. I know Rory personally and he's a good fella. So you don't want to see any manager lose their job. And as I said, it was a really tough interview after the match. He was crestfallen. He really was, because he knew himself, Dave. You know, when you're so close in the title race and you don't get the job done, and whatever about not even finishing second, they finished fourth, which they're out of the European places, and everybody knows how important the European places are nowadays as well.
And so, of course, his long association with the club as a former player,
yeah,
as well.
I think he mentioned in the build up to the cup final, he was, or afterwards, he's 9 years as a player, 3 as a manager, so that's a long, long affiliation. Now, from speaking to people involved up there, I think he was kind of receiving a lot of online abuse and personal abuse, which is totally uncalled for, and that's totally wrong, Dave. As you says, he's after giving 12 years of his life to that club,
and unfortunately that type of thing is just becoming more and more common, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's horrible, it really is, like, because some of the stuff I heard, that like the personal abuse he was receiving was absolutely disgraceful, it really was. And regardless of whether he's not performing well or doing well, you can have criticisms, but it was getting really, really personal, almost to the point where I looked at Rory on Sunday and I thought maybe it might be a relief to him, Dave, you know, the pressure and the stress that he was under, and have had a couple of personal issues. I know his brother there passed away also, so it's been a difficult time and a trying time for him. Hopefully he can bounce back, he's only young. Sometimes something like this can only make you stronger, Dave, and I know how passionate he is about the game and loves the game, and as I said, he will bounce back, I've no doubt about that. But it's just a sad ending to, as what you said at the start there, what promised so much this season. It's a sad ending.
And what about next season for Derry, because obviously they're on the lookout now for a new manager, and also they're losing players already. Yeah. We're here today, among them Patrick McElhenney.
Yeah, that's disappointing as well for me, Dave, because I looked at, I saw that news, and players look, have to be selfish and look after themselves, but that strikes me as a lot of kind of confusion and uncertainty when you're facing into the biggest game of the season in the cup final, because these deals that they're signing that are being announced today, they weren't just done today, they've been in the offing for probably 2, 3, 4 weeks, and clubs have been on to players, and obviously players have to look after themselves. But from a Derry point of view, if you're going into the match, and obviously Rory wants to go into the match with his strongest team possible, and also the squad stable and secure, knowing that this is where I'm going to be next year, there seems to be so much uncertainty with the amount of players that have been out of contract as well and letting their contracts run down. So I think that's a club issue, and that should have been something where Rory should have been supported on, or something that should have been resolved heading into the cup final, because it's no surprise to see the way they played as well, Dave, when you think of the players that are all jumping ship, if you like, today. This was probably in the offing for a long time, and the one criticism that's been labelled at them for that cup final, and it was blatantly obvious, is they had no fight or no hunger whatsoever in that match, which tells me a lot of these lads were already out of the building before the game, even on Sunday.
Having said all that, managing Derry City is still a big job, and still a very attractive job for whoever comes in.
Oh, it's a massive job, it really is, Dave. One of the biggest clubs in the country, and as you said, this is the last 2 or 3 years with Rory there, they won the FAI Cup, finishing second both years in the league, this year fourth, runners up in the cup final. So it's a huge opportunity. I'm sure there'll be many, many people interested, many candidates putting their hat into the ring, and it'll be interesting to see who to go for. But not only the manager's job needs to be resolved, I think there's a lot of stuff, as I said, off the field in terms of the professionalism and how it's been run and the support that Rory is getting. You look at a lot of other clubs now going down the road of directors of football and almost a team around the manager, if you like. That doesn't seem to be the case, where it almost felt like Rory was doing everything on his own, and ultimately that stress just kind of got probably too much for him in the end. And I don't think that's fair, that he will suffer the brunt of the criticism, but I think there's a lot of other issues that have obviously been there as well that need to be rectified, certainly when a new manager comes in.
Yeah, there is of course still one very important fixture to come in the domestic season. It happens tomorrow, Drogheda United against Bray Wanderers at Tallaght Stadium for a place in the Premier Division next season. Really big odds, really big prize, I should say, at stake for the winner.
Massive, Dave. Yeah, I'm heading along to the game, I'm looking forward to it. It'll finish off, and it's a big weird, really, a game tomorrow off the back of the cup final, because the cup final is always the final game and it kind of closes the season for us. So to have another game, it's just the unusual circumstance that obviously Drogheda are in the playoff as well, so they had no choice but the fixture on this Saturday, but you would have to fancy Drogheda. I thought they were outstanding on Sunday. They really were. The performance that they gave, the way they were set up, how well organised they were, and ultimately the hunger and the fight and the desire that they showed on the day as well. And I think, Kevin, as much as they were on a massive high off the back of that, I think they're a grounded enough group to realise that this game is so serious and so important, because they want to be involved in the Premier Division. That's where it's at. No disrespect to the First Division, and I often have sympathy for the First Division. I think more support needs to go towards the First Division. Everybody's focusing on the Premier Division at the moment, which is great, and we're trying to build the league and the interest that's in it, but I still think you can't be neglecting some clubs in the First Division who have serious history and pedigree as well. And I played out in Bray with Bray Wanderers, and they were in the Premier Division for years and years. So I think clubs like that shouldn't be neglected either. But I just think with the game tomorrow with Drogheda, the confidence that obviously the strong end to the season that they've had as well, and the confidence that the cup final win will give them, I fancy them strongly, Dave.
There's obviously a huge Drogheda contingent at the Aviva last Sunday. There'll be a big crowd tomorrow, but I also know that there'll be a large contingent from Bray making the short journey to Tallaght Stadium. And Bray must be given a lot of credit for getting this far.
Yeah, absolutely, Dave. 100%. And I think Pat Devlin's still involved out there. And when you think of people giving service to sport and service to clubs over the years, Pat's right up there with the best of them for all the years of service he's given to Bray Wanderers. And to be still involved is absolutely amazing. Like, when you think tomorrow he's going to be involved in that game with Bray and how well they've done, and last week when the team, the 25 year Jubilee team, was brought out onto the pitch, Pat was bringing those players out as well. So it just goes to show the longevity that he's had in the game, and it's absolutely amazing. And Bray will bring a big crowd. They brought a big crowd to the semi-final or the final in Dalymount, so there will be a big crowd. Drogheda as well, I think the ticket sales are very good. Again, more positive news for the league, but it's a huge game, and as you said, there's so much at stake, but I just fancy Drogheda, to be honest.
Okay, we'll park the domestic football there for the moment. Let's now reflect on the Republic of Ireland's win last night. As we said at the start of the programme, England await at Wembley on Sunday, but last night at the Aviva Stadium against Finland, not one but two Irish heroes emerged.
Josh Cullen, O'Dowda, Johnston, Mikey Johnston, lots of tricks, decent delivery, goal, Evan Ferguson. Well, they've lived on the edge several times this evening, really playing with fire, and Evan Ferguson gets his fourth goal for his country, and it couldn't have come at a better time. There's a potential penalty check. VAR having a look at this.
This could go against you.
Yeah, hope good not. Indeed. Potential handball is the description. Referee's going to have a look at this, and I think he's going to give the penalty. Now, here's the decision. Referee gives the penalty. You're just never surprised, are you, when they run over to the monitor? We've seen it time and time again. Queeveen Kelleher is eyeing up Tojan Talo, trying to do anything he can to put him off. Tojan Talo has scored 16 times for Finland. A draw's no good to them. They've got to win. But to do that, they've got to get back on level terms first. And this is not popular with the Irish fans. There's no surprise in that. Tojan Talo scored against Ireland in Helsinki. Kelleher in goal. What a save! And Kelleher with the follow-up. He saved it.
Forgive us for going a little bit over the top with our celebrations after a win over Finland, but look, at a win is a win. We'll get back to Fergal in a moment. Alan, as I said, look, that was slightly tongue-in-cheek in terms of the hero status we're putting on Queeveen Keller and Evan Ferguson. But overall, I mean, what did you make of the performance?
I thought the performance was only okay, to be honest with you, Dave. We rode our luck for large spells in the game, but the most important thing, and this is something that we've discussed many, many times in the studio over the last number of years, is the result is what's so important, and especially when we're in the situation where we're in, where we're crying out for wins. It's hard to be critical when they do get the victory, but I thought we rode our luck for large spells in the game. I thought Finland played very, very well. But that's something that maybe you could argue we didn't have under Stephen Kenny. There was many, many great performances, I felt, under Stephen, and we never got the rub of the green. So maybe we're flip-flopping a little bit where we didn't really get the performance that we were after, but we got the result.
And Fergal, I suppose in the past there have been plenty of occasions when the Republic of Ireland have played well and not got the result. So we should probably, you know, enjoy a result when it does come along.
Absolutely. I'd agree with Alan, this idea of the kind of rub of the green and a lack of positivity. I kind of feel a bit similar to the last Finland game where it was far from perfect. There was a lot of things that were still a little bit concerning in terms of patterns of play and chances that were given up. But there has been a lot of negativity swirling around in terms of the actual final result coming off the pitch at the end of the game with a win that can actually build some forward momentum. And that's exactly what it was last night. These are the type of games that if actual progress is going to be made, they have to be won. They can't be drawn or kind of passed over until next time. They have to be won, particularly at home, to then give a stepping stone to Greece and then obviously to a higher level opposition in England, not just this weekend, but in future when higher level opposition are on the card.
Alan, as often is the case when an international window comes around, there were a number of players unavailable. That will be the case again on Sunday and also for England, who are going to be missing a lot of big name players. But one of the big positives seems to be last night, the partnership of Smodics and Ferguson.
Yeah, I thought it was very good. Probably our best players, really, bar maybe Nathan Collins, but certainly in terms of the attacking threat that they provide, I think they're very, very exciting. I'm a big fan of Smodic. I think he's a bright spark. Every time I see him, whether it's at club level and now at international level, he's always on the front foot. He's very lively, he's very proactive, and I really like that in a player, Dave. There's a spark about him which I love to see, and there's a desire as well that he has, that he wants to, you can see him wanting to do well for Ireland. And now the partnership with Evan seems to be getting back to full fitness as well. I thought he put in a really good shift as well, not just in terms of the goal. I thought his hold up play was quite decent. He was getting involved. If he didn't get a pass, he played to Smodic in the first half. I know he was just offside, but it was a brilliant pass. So they can almost alternate as Evan dropped in deep that time and Smodic was on the shoulder, and he has a real eye for goal as well, Smodic, as we've seen at club level. So I think that has the makings of a really good partnership. And I like, to be fair, the manager as well. He was quite attack minded last night. Now it could have came back to cost him, but as Fergal says, you're at home, the onus is on you to go after a result. He played literally with two wingers, left the midfield a little bit isolated at times with Knight and Cullen, and they carved us open. But they had the three in there and they carved us open at times against better opposition, the likes of England. They'll obviously punish those mistakes, but I felt his approach maybe earned him a little bit of luck, Dave, in the sense that he wanted to go after the result and try and get the victory by playing the two out and out wingers and the two boys up top as well. He might revert to something a bit more pragmatic, obviously, in the game away from home against England when you're playing against better opposition, but I just felt maybe that approach last night was probably what earned us the victory as well. So definitely with those two boys up top, I think there's a lot of optimism to be had with those.
And Fergal, a man very much under the spotlight last night was Matt Doherty, who wasn't even in the last two Ireland squad announcements, but he started last night.
I think it's a situation of pragmatism. I think the manager's been quite clear that for the kind of short to medium term, he's not in his immediate plans. He's not really getting a look in at club level, and potentially there's a move away from the old guard in terms of some of the squad members, and he's one of those. But when you have a situation, as you mentioned before, with injuries, players who are not available, you have to be realistic about the situation. Matt Doherty's very experienced for the national team. He's played lots of Premier League football throughout his career. So he's someone that, even if his performance levels have dropped, he's not someone that will come in and not be aware of what he has to do in terms of positioning and what's expected of him. Is he going to be included in Halgrimsson's plans going into World Cup qualification and further along from that? My gut would say no. But national team football, particularly at the moment when there's so much controversy around the international breaks so early within the domestic season in relation to the Premier League and club managers not being happy about that, you have to react accordingly. And in fairness to him, he's come in, he's filled the gap when he's needed. He was relatively okay last night. And the manager, who's every time I hear him speak, Heimir Hallgrímsson, he's very honest and straightforward about his assessment of players' performances and what is needed. So I think that was just a case of that last night. And it's, you know, it's positive to see that players will come in, even when they know that it's probably not going to be for the long term, but they will answer the call. They'll come in, they'll do a job, and ultimately, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, make sure that that result gets over the line, because that is what is the most important thing at the moment.
Alan, Caoimhín Kelleher again, his stock continues to rise. The reports from Liverpool suggest that Alisson is back in training and is available, likely to be available when the Premier League resumes next weekend. Do you see any scenario whereby Kelleher keeps Alisson out of the Liverpool team now?
Yeah, I do. I really do, Dave, because he's playing so well and he's performing at such a high level. And it's also a new manager as well, Slot. It's not like Klopp, who obviously Alisson was his number one. And I know Klopp was a fan of Kelleher, but ultimately he was his number one regardless of what Kelleher did. Now you have a new manager, and this manager, I don't think, takes any nonsense. There's a lot of talk about Trent at the moment. You see in all the games he's taken him off. He has Bradley there. He'd be quite happy to play Bradley.
Andy Robertson has been dropped or arrested, whatever
Simicast,
you like yourself.
Yeah, because I think Robertson probably hasn't hit the heights of what we've known over the years. So Simicast is getting an opportunity as well. So I do think this manager will be loyal to whoever's performing well and playing well. And to be fair to Kelleher, we mentioned this a few weeks ago when he got the run in the team. He's also, it's a no-lose situation for him because he's performing so well, playing at such a brilliant club. His stock, as you said, is rising so high. And if it was a thing, Liverpool ultimately don't want him in the end, because we know they have Mamardashvili waiting in the wings
summer,
as well.
Yeah.
So it's not just Alisson he's competing with, Dave. He's going to put himself in such a brilliant position in the shop window in terms of maybe a Fulham or whoever, a mid-table Premier League club as well, because he's so good. He's absolutely brilliant, Kelleher.
Is he not better than that? Better than
potentially,
mid-table,
who knows, maybe I'm doing him a disservice because I rate him so highly. And the one thing I think over everything that he has on top of his ability, his temperament is unbelievable. It's outstanding. He's and that's so important as well when you think of even going into a club the size of Liverpool, and he's never overawed by the occasion. The players that he's playing with in terms of Van Dijk and all those big name players, yet they have to hide the respect for him. So I can only say good things about him, Dave. I think he's absolutely outstanding, and I'd love to see the manager back him next week when Alisson was back. And I think he might.
Fergal, what do you think?
I don't like disagreeing with Alan, but I don't think he will. And I think it's just the kind of brutality of Premier League football. I would agree completely with everything that Alan has said, that Kelleher has proven himself that he's not just a backup, he's not just a stand-in, he's comfortably a Premier League level goalkeeper. And I've said that all along. The issue is just the situation with Alisson. What I would say, and I think I said this a few weeks ago as well, is that there may now be conversations going on in Liverpool about Alisson's physical condition, because the injuries are a little bit more regular. They're keeping him out for a little bit longer than Arne Slot would want. That could potentially mean there's a change in the summer. We're all anticipating Kelleher to move on when the campaign ends. We know that he was keen on going last summer, and the club kind of blocked it. And now, obviously, Mamardashvili will come in 2025. If there's a situation where, and we've seen this with certain players, where suddenly the physical decline kicks in, then Kelleher's ready to roll. We've seen that now. There's no issue there. But I honestly don't think that Slot, particularly for the Premier League, for the Champions League, if Alisson is fit and the medical staff are saying, no, there's no issue with him, keep him in place, throw him back in the team, I think he will. And I can't underline it enough by saying that that's nothing to do with Kelleher's form for Liverpool or for Ireland. That's just the position that Alisson has carved himself out at Liverpool.
Alan, looking ahead to Wembley on Sunday, we mentioned a number of big-name players missing for England, Cole Palmer, Phil Foden, Trent Alexander-Arnold among them. But still, a really tough challenge ahead for Ireland.
No, absolutely. They're on a different level altogether to us, Dave. So I think last night was so important that we got the victory, and now they can go into the game on Sunday obviously knowing we've the 3 points in the bag, third place is secured, and almost go and give the best account of themselves really without any great expectation, because we already seen what England did to us here in the Aviva a few weeks ago. So a lot of those players probably won't be playing, but the strength and depth that they have is phenomenal. I only seen the highlights of the England match last night, but even like, and Fergal would know, Curtis Jones and the form that he's in at the moment. Mm-hmm. But players like that who would be seen as backup players, and they're top quality as well, Dave. Watkins obviously got the start over Kane last night. He scores as well. They still had Bellingham who started last night. So England have a plethora of players really in terms of the talent at the very, very highest level. So it's going to be a tough ask, but I think last night was so important that we got the victory. They'll bounce into the game on Sunday. They'll obviously be confident, our boys, but there's no great expectation on them, and there shouldn't be either.
And Fergal, from an English point of view, it is an important game because they need to win to guarantee that they win the group and win promotion.
Yeah, and obviously that from the wider perspective for the players in the squad, they know that Thomas Tuchel will be watching. This is the last game before he takes charge at the start of 2025, and World Cup qualification is a big aspect for them. So there's Alan mentioned Curtis Jones there. He'd be one of them. There's plenty of other players that know they're far from settled in that squad and far from settled in Thomas Tuchel's plans. So they've got an opportunity on Sunday to push that case, to say that when Lee Carsley does the handover, and there will be conversation between himself and Thomas Tuchel about which players are ready to make that step up and be regulars for England. They want to be on that list, and Sunday's the last opportunity to do that. I think tactically, as Alan mentioned a minute ago, Jaime Helgrenson will change things around a little bit, personnel and system-wise, to maybe get an extra body to drop in and help Cullen and Knight to make sure that England don't just dominate the ball and it doesn't turn into a similar situation that it was at the Aviva back in September. But there will be opportunities for Ireland. I would just say the main thing is that pace in wide areas, Johnston, Ebosele, if he's fit. I do think England might change at fullback. I don't think Kyle Walker will play two games on the run, so that could mean Rico Lewis moving across, Livramento, Lewis Hall. None of them are wildly experienced. All very good footballers, but there's an opportunity there, particularly with the pace and the one-on-one ability that Johnston and Ebosele have got, and particularly for Evan Ferguson. If he gets a chance, or maybe two chances across 90 minutes, if he can stick one in the back of the net, that could really see him kick on. But it could be a really, really long night, and that just makes it all the more imperative that if a chance falls Ireland's way, they have to bury it.
We mentioned Alan Quevin Kelleher. Do you expect him to be very busy on Sunday night?
Very busy, Dave. Because even there, I'm just thinking, I mentioned Curtis Jones, but even Matt Aweke was outstanding last night. When you think of Saka, Foden, and the dilemma England had during the Euros and which one of them was going to play, and yeah, here's Matt Aweke lighting it up at the moment for Chelsea as well. So the strength and depth is really phenomenal, and not alone that, as Fergal mentioned, they're all hungry to prove themselves as well. So it's not like these boys are coming in England thinking this might be a stroll in the park. They're coming in trying to prove themselves to a new manager and establish themselves in that squad as well. So it will be a busy night for Kelleher, but we've already seen him pulling off save after save for us. We see the Greek game, so he certainly won't be overawed by that. I just hope we can give a good account to themselves, and I definitely think he needs to be a little bit, and he is a pragmatic manager anyway. I think last night he was just being a bit brave because of the opposition, and we're at home, which is fine, and I like that move. And the one thing, he's so honest in his interviews and his press conference, even after the match. We've been used to managers dressing up results. He doesn't dress up any result. The first thing he said last night, we were very lucky, and we were, which you're not pulling the wool over anyone's eyes sitting at home. Everyone could see that, and I really like that in the manager as well, Dave. So I think on Sunday he'll revert back to type maybe and be a little bit more pragmatic, certainly in that midfield area, the central area. Knight and Cullen were getting carved open at times last night, and it's not just their fault. It's very, very difficult in the modern game when you go with that 4-4-2 system and you have three outnumbering a two all the time. So I felt sorry for them a little bit, even though they put in a really good shift, but I definitely think they need help in that central area against the quality of opposition that you'll face on Sunday.
Fergal, just before I let you go, I just want to get your thoughts on the Harry Kane criticism. Harry Kane very critical last night of the number of withdrawals from this England squad.
I think it's obviously his role as leader and captain. He's very experienced and he takes that very seriously. I was quite surprised by how firm he was in his comments, because he knows that obviously that will be taken up by the players that are absent because of injury. And it's a difficult one to gauge. I think maybe when he looks back on it, he thinks he might have gone in a bit too strongly, because it is a delicate balance between leading the team and making sure that he's keeping all those players in check and making sure that standards don't drop and, you know, that they're not dropping out for a less than adequate reason. I personally found it a little bit strange, because he is a leader and he does speak his mind when he's asked by the media. But I found his choice of words a bit strong. I know, obviously, as I mentioned before, there's the issues over so much football being played, so many games and three international breaks and the domestic season getting chopped up because of it. His choice of words I found a bit odd, particularly because quite a few of the players that haven't joined up for the England squad are regulars, are important players. So there wouldn't be a question that they were stepping away because of something minor. So, yeah, interesting choice of words from Harry Kane, I think.
Fergal, Alan, many thanks. Really enjoyed that. We'll talk to you again next weekend, and or next week, rather, looking back on the game. And just a reminder that there'll be coverage of England versus the Republic of Ireland across all RTE platforms on Sunday evening.
RTE 2FM.
Game on.
Rugby.
Argentina are in Dublin for Ireland's second autumn series game, coached, of course, by former Leinster man Felipe Contepone. They have beaten France, New Zealand, Australia and world champion South Africa already this year. And last weekend, Argentina were comfortable winners over Italy. Tonight's game is live on Sport Extra on RTE Radio 1. Match commentator Michael Corcoran joins me now. Evening to you, Michael. And we'll just have Michael there now any moment. As we said, it's Ireland's second autumn series game, beaten by New Zealand last week. And just the one change in personnel for tonight's game. And as I said, there'll be live commentary on RTE Radio 1. Michael, just I suppose, first of all, on the team selection, just the one change in personnel from that New Zealand defeat. Were you expecting perhaps a few more changes? Okay, we're just having a problem there connecting to Michael Corcoran at the Aviva Stadium. But we will be joining Michael, and looking forward to that game in a few moments.
RTE
2FM.
Now, at the second attempt, always worth waiting for, of course, Michael Corcoran joins me from the Aviva Stadium. Michael, you're very welcome to Game On.
Dave, I'd say you were a bit nervous there.
I was indeed, yeah.
I could actually feel it. I could feel the nerves from here, to be fair about it, but we're here.
Yeah. We were just mentioning, Michael, obviously Ireland's second autumn series game tonight. Leinster man Felipe Contepomi, the Argentina coach, a man familiar for Irish rugby supporters. This Argentina team obviously going to provide a stiff test, but the Ireland team, first of all, just a word on that, Michael, just the one change in personnel from the All Blacks defeat. Were you perhaps expecting one or two more?
I think everybody was. That's the reality about it. I mean, Ireland was so poor last week that you could have made a case for half a dozen changes, Dave. That's the reality about it. But that's not the way that Andy Farrell operates. He tends to, you know, if you underperform, he tends to have a nice kind of manly chat with the players and tell them that they're lucky to be getting a second chance. And I think it's a second chance for a lot of the players, basically. And that obviously puts a bit of pressure on then, basically. Now he's freshened up the bench, so we'll be hoping for a bit of impact off the bench as well also. Because there was zero impact from the bench last week. That's the reality. So you could have made quite a few changes. Just in terms of the Argentina team, three changes there altogether. Guido Petty comes into the second row. Pablo Matera, their vice captain, back after serving a suspension for a red card. A very, very spiky player. Their back row is as good as the New Zealand back row was last week. And Mateus Moroni, who is their first choice centre, is into the centre as well. The Argentinian team actually just off the bus. They're already out in the pitch in front of us here, walking around the place. Jerry Thorney from the Irish Times is alongside me. And just looking at the body language, Jerry, of the Argentinian players, as the Irish team have just arrived in the tunnel underneath our position in the stand here, that Argentinian team look very focused.
Yeah, if you look at Ireland from outside, Ireland were top dogs coming into this Autumn Nations series. You know, Ireland have become quite a prized scalp. Argentina was looking through all their records. They've had several wins in Scotland and Wales. They've won in England. They've won everywhere bar here. And I would safely say that when Felipe Contepomi brought their squad together before they even set foot to go to Udine in Italy for last week's first game, and even though they've got France next week, I'd safely say he circled the Ireland game as the one they most wanted to win. They've lost in all 10 visits here, 11 if you include the 1973 visit. And going through the team sheets, Felipe Contepomi was on the losing side four times here, all in November, all in Dublin. Now, the spite has gone out of the rivalry between the two, thankfully. It's not as bad as it was then. At times in the noughties, it got pretty spicy. And a lot of those 10 matches all seemed to blend into one. There were dogged arm wrestles, and Ireland eventually wore down Argentina, except for 3 years ago, which you wouldn't count because I think that was their 23rd away match in a row, and they spent the whole of 2021 in a bubble. This team is possibly the best Argentinian team that's come here, certainly in a good while. Kontopomi's done a fabulous job. Even though they made the semi-final of the World Cup, this is a much better side than the one that made the semi-final of the World Cup. He's given them license to have a go from their own line if it's on. So they've got to play with a lot more freedom and ambition. They've got wonderful players. You mentioned the back row, Matera. This guy, Gonzalez, is like, he's a Caelan Doris, just 2 years younger. And Oviedo's a really good player as well. It's a great back row. They've got good players throughout. I mean, Gonzalo Bertinu, even Thomas Albornoz, he solved their out half riddle. And he never looked particularly exceptional player with Benetton. He's 27 years of age, yet he looks world class in this Pumas team. He kind of solved their riddle halfway through the championship. So they arrive having targeted this game, and you're right, I think they look very focused, and this is the one they really want to win.
When you consider how poor Ireland were last week, you know, in terms of the handling errors, 30 missed tackles, give away 13 penalties, only 7 out of 10 in the line-out. I don't know how you felt after the game last Friday with those kind of facts, and then turning over the page to have a look at Italy-Argentina. Because when that game finished, I closed my notebook and I thought, holy, you know what, this Argentina team are good where Ireland were poor.
Yeah, yeah. Juan Cruz Malia is world-class, I think.
Unbelievable.
World-class to lose. Mm. Like, to lose, don't sign dummies. We should know that. Rodrigo Isco, the king of the sevens, the daddy of the sevens, brilliant under the high ball, might be susceptible defensively. Italy got at that corridor a few times, that disconnect between 13 and 14. I could see Ireland going after that. But yeah, they're strong throughout. There's no doubt about it. Montoya at hooker is a magnificent player. Petty, I think the selection you've outlined there, Petty coming back in, Moroni coming back in, Matera coming back from suspension, and Santiago Carreras on the bench. Yeah. He's a wonderful player. I don't know what his best position is. It's not 10, but he's a wonderful player, and he can come on. He could dovetail with Albornoz, and they could be lethal in the last 20 minutes. The game is still in the balance. So, yeah, I think it's a very potent, multi-layered Argentina team. They've warmed up nicely. Now, they're notoriously not good at backing up performances week to week. They go and beat All Blacks away, get hammered away a week later. They go and lose to Australia at home and put 67 points on them a week later. They beat South Africa at home and ship nearly 50 a week later. But I just don't think... I think they're primed for a really big performance here. And I think what Andy Farrell has done, you're right, I think he's just given everybody a second chance, saying lucky enough to be in a few cases... And he's relying on their desire to atone. That's a very powerful spur for an Irish team who came up short, as like you said, in so many aspects last week, which was unusual. I came away a bit perplexed by that performance. And you would expect them to be much better in all areas and bring an awful lot more intensity.
How concerned are you about the makeup of the Irish bench? You know, particularly in the case of a dogfight. Thomas Clarkson debut, Sam Prendergast debut, Craig Casey there as well. Only 15 caps. Okay, I'm being nice about that. Obviously, there are people like Keane Healy who will at some stage equal Dricko's record, basically, and Jamie Arsbonner as well. Just 3 caps there as well. I mean, if we're looking for signs of a cavalry, and they're needed for, as the golfing people say, and I think I might have used it last week as well, going down the stretch, the last 10, 15 minutes of this game. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear where you're coming from. It's certainly nowhere near as experienced as last week. I think last week that bench had 498 caps. Now it's just over 300, something like that. You're right, Casey doesn't have an awful lot of experience. Prendergast has 0. Jamie Osborne was excellent in South Africa in the 2 games. Good player. I think his temperament is sound. I wouldn't be at all worried that he wouldn't make a big impact. Pierre Amani, we know. I think it's... I might have said it, I don't know, but it's good to see Ryan Baird back in. He should be in the Irish 23. He should be in the Leinster starting 15 by now. He's good enough to do this. He's a wonderful athlete. He could be a game breaker off the bench. The Clarkson one is forced upon them because Tadhg Furlong, I'm told, aggravated a hamstring injury over in Portugal. And so they were never going to risk him. And obviously we saw Tom O'Toole going off and he had to undergo the 12-day return to play protocols. It's a position Ireland need to develop some depth in anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, he's never present in a Grand Slam under 20 winning side. He's 24. He's played 47 games for Leinster. He's got a lot of rugby for Leinster this season. Now looks like a good time to bring him in.
These are the times that you have to test these people, to be fair about it. I mean, and how are you feeling about the game? I mean, you've mentioned and Dave mentioned in the introduction as well. You know, the rugby championship, Argentina beating New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, the first time ever in the same tournament. They've beaten France as well. They stuffed Italy last week, that's the reality. You know, people, I was talking to someone during the week and they kind of went, ah, yeah, but how good were Italy? But the thing is that they put a big number on them.
You're right, you're absolutely right. You would have thought that Irish rugby fans, of all the rugby fans of the world, would learn how to, the one team they would have learned how to respect would be Los Pumas, going back to Lons in 1991. 4 World Cup meetings and they've won 3 of them. Mm. They've ended Ireland's interest in 3 World Cups out of 4 meetings. So yeah, Ireland have a good record. I think you're right. I don't think, unless they're avid rugby championship watchers, I'm not sure people really appreciate what a seriously good side this Argentinian side is. don't forget, until Ireland did it in 2018, was it, and again a couple of years later, beat the three Southern Hemisphere heavyweights in the same year, only one team had ever done that before, and that was Martin Johnson's England in 2003. So Argentina, just the fourth side ever to beat New Zealand, Australia and South Africa in the same year. That's serious form.
Talk about Felipe Contepomi. I mean, he's revered in these parts. That's the reality. I mean, I was online in tune with his press conference the other day, and the days are all morphed into one. I can't remember what day it was. And he was talking about the fact of, like, he has spent over a quarter of his adult life here in Dublin, basically, between playing and coaching and everything like that. So I know he linked up with Leinster in their training yesterday, and he was meeting up with all his old mates there and the whole lot. He gets us, like, that's the reality, but we get him as well, because he's such a, we both know him.
Yeah.
We had a good fortune to meet him one time in Santa Fe for a cup of coffee, and he said, I'm delighted to meet the two of you here, because this is the real Argentina.
Which it is too. That was memorable going there to Buenos Aires. It's nice to get that. He's an extraordinary character. He's very charismatic, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's a kind of a little bit of a larger than life personality. He is revered and adored by ex-Leinster teammates, coaches and supporters alike. His legacy is huge. He must probably be one of Leinster's two greatest imports ever, along with Issa Nasewa. And what's more, unlike Issa, he came back and had a real impact coaching. And it was interesting listening to Caelan Doris talking about Felipe's coaching skills during the week. I remember asking a former Argentina national, former Leinster player, what Felipe was like as a coach, and he said, surprisingly calm compared to the player he was on the pitch.
Yeah.
He's very methodical, very calm. You don't see that Latin temperament come through nearly as much. He's excellent in one-on-one coaching. He's superb at coming up with launch plays, off lineouts and things like that. Absolutely outstanding at that. And we saw that in his time at Leinster. And then he cut his teeth under Lancaster and Leo Cullen at Leinster. Then he goes to Argentina and he's number two to Michael Checa, a bit like Andy Farrell. He watched, looked, listened and learned of what Checa was doing and said, I can make little adjustments here. And he has. Like I said earlier, he's made them a better team. They're much more adventurous. That performance against Australia in round four where they put 67 points on. I know there was talk of the Wallabies having had food poisoning earlier that week. I think three tries in the last 5 minutes distorted the score down a little bit. But when the likes of Albornoz and Carreras and Malia are just in full flow, they're a joy to watch, and he gives them license to play heads-up rugby. He really does.
All right, Jordy, listen, thanks for that. It's a nervy night ahead, Dave. That's the reality about it. I mean, it's Ireland, not against an ordinary team. This is, as I mentioned, and we have alluded to the fact that the number of seriously good teams that Argentina have beaten so far this year, and you just sincerely hope that Ireland can raise the performance level in terms of last week. They have to. I expect Ireland to be better, but I expect Argentina to be better, given the fact that they've made so many changes as well, too. So I'll tell you what, this is going to be an arm wrestle, not for the faint-hearted.
Ireland by a score?
I don't know. I'm not going to call it. I actually think Argentina could win it.
Okay.
Dave?
Okay, thanks, gents. And Michael, we'll look forward to your commentary tonight from the Aviva Stadium against Argentina. Now we're going to move on to racing, and there's two big days of racing at Navan this weekend. And the Best of Sunday's card will be live on RTE2. Tomorrow's feature is the Grade 2 Fortria Chase. Captain Guinness, Cheltenham Champion Chase winner, bidding for three in a row in this race. I'm now joined by Jane Mangan to look ahead to the weekend. Evening, Jane.
Evening, Dave. I am just after arriving at Bristol Airport. I was at Cheltenham today, and I'm looking forward to watching it from the comfort of my couch tomorrow.
And as we say, two big days at Navan. The RTE cameras will be there, as we mentioned, on Sunday. But interesting to see how Captain Guinness goes tomorrow.
Definitely, yeah. It's actually a very good race. 2 miles, grade two. Captain Guinness is the reigning champion from Cheltenham, but Banbridge is the reigning champion from Punchestown. Found a 50, has the benefit of a run. He's last year's novice that was second in the Arkle behind Gaelic Warrior, and he was really good at Down Royal when he reappeared. And the addition of Gentleman Demi will ensure that it is a proper stern test of pace. But you know what? I actually like Banbridge here. I think dropping back in trip would be no problem for him. Paul Townend is booked in the omission of JJ Slevin due to his injury at the moment is unfortunate for him. But I think with an official rating of 65, Banbridge is the highest rated horse. And to me, he sets the standard.
And also tomorrow, the seasonal reappearance in the Lismullen Chase of Bob Olinger.
Yes, Bob Olinger, obviously a lot of the racing fans will be familiar with him, having won number of grade ones over hurdles and fences. He reappears here in the Lismullen Hurdle under Darragh O'Keefe. Jatara is in there, home by the Lee, former grade one winner at this distance is in there as well, along with Zana here and Maxim. But quick ground is probably key to Bob Olinger, and I think he'll really appreciate it. The Mare Jatara is a worthy opponent because she's after winning on the flat recently, so she's really race fit. But I suppose this is a good starting point for Bob Olinger, particularly with Henry de Bromhead's horses in such good form.
And for you on Sunday, the Troy Town, the standout?
Troy Town is a standout, and you know, it's great to be back. The RT cameras will be there. Cal will be presenting with Davy Russell, Andrew McNamara and myself. A field of 20 declared for the Troy Town, 11 of them trained by Gordon Elliott, and he feels the favourite in American Mike. But it's actually his other runner in the same colours, Chemical Energy, that I'm interested in. He was third in the Munster National. He's got Carol Miller taking £7 off, and he was fifth in a very good renewal of the Galway Plate as well over the summer. So I think Chemical Energy on this type of ground. We have gotten cold, Dave, but we haven't had much rain. And don't forget, while there is really good racing at Navan, Cheltenham is a star attraction, as always. There's a good Irish contingent gone over. We didn't have any Irish winner there today, but hopefully tomorrow maybe Patrick and Willie Mullins will team up to win the bumper with Corinthia. Tony Martin has Hassium in there in a handicap, and the Paddy Power Gold Cup is a huge race. Willie Mullins sends over JP McManus' big price outsider in Janadil, but it looks like it's going to be hard to repel Ginny's Destiny for Henry, for Paul Nicholls and Harry Copton.
Jane, good to talk to you as always, and enjoy the racing over the weekend.
Thanks, Dave.
RTE 2FM.
A historic rematch.
Yo, listen, yeah, that kid is in the jungle.
Last time they met in the ring, history was made, and women's boxing was catapulted to new heights.
This is what we want.
Katie Taylor.
This is what it's all about. It's an absolutely historic fight.
Amanda Serrano.
She has some unfinished business, Katie.
Two all-time greats. One epic rematch. What happens next? Only one way to know.
Yes, edging ever closer to that big fight. RTE's Paul O'Flynn has reported on many of Katie Taylor's bouts down the years and has travelled to Arlington, Texas for tonight's clash. Paul, just give us a sense now as we edge ever closer to the big fight of the atmosphere there.
Yeah, certainly building, Dave. It's early here. It's lunchtime, so still a long way to go to the actual fight night. But certainly all week long there's been a real building atmosphere. Clearly the Jake Paul Mike Tyson fight is the one that's on everyone's lips. You see people going around wearing the t-shirts, the billboards have the signs up, there's ads all over the place, and it's certainly the one that everyone's talking about. But look, within that we have our own Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano, the real fight of the night, the real big fight, the world title's on the line, and it's edging down ever closer to what will be a really spectacular night.
Paul, I saw your interview with Katie when you asked her about the circus aspect of this bout, and particularly the Jake Paul, Mike Tyson fight. She obviously, discounted that. But have you sensed that sort of circus atmosphere around the place?
Yeah, it's really obvious. You could see it at the press conference the other day. Jake Paul really trying to get his viral moment. Look, that's what he specialises in. He's a promoter. He's a YouTuber. And that's what he was looking for. But Mike Tyson just wasn't playing ball with him. He was giving monosyllabic answers and gave that kind of general impression of that he didn't want to be there. And you could certainly, I think, just pick it out from Katie. She just looked a little bit uncomfortable in the whole situation. And Serrano, too, it has to be said. I think she'll obviously talk publicly. Jake Paul is making this promotion. He's making them all very, very wealthy with this show. So nobody's going to turn against him. But I think that sense is definitely there. But that doesn't take away from the fact that for Katie and for Amanda Serrano, it's a world title match. It's the rematch that everyone's been waiting for. When the bell goes, it's a proper fight, a proper contest. And it's the big, huge stadium fight that Katie has wanted all her life. There'll be, I think, around about 60,000 people there. It's in one of the best stadiums in the world. And then there's that added carrot of Netflix, which just just brings a whole new audience. And Katie has always spoken about what she wants to do to promote women's boxing. She has done so much for the sport. And I think she just sees tonight as another step as well. And she's spoken so much about her own admiration for Mike Tyson too as a boxer when she was growing up. So I don't think like she sees it as a pure circus. I think she is genuinely honoured, I think, she, as the words she used herself, to be on the same card as Mike Tyson, albeit he's 58 now. But I think that's definitely how she sees it. And I think she's hoping for the win tonight that we're all really hoping for too.
Paul, thanks for joining us. It's 1 o'clock there in Arlington, Texas. So get yourself some lunch. I know it's a busy night ahead for you. That's it for tonight's Game On. My thanks to producer Andrew O'Connor and BCO Max Falvey. After the news, it's the official chart show.